be the first down week in threes as investors deal with a trifecta of really frightening prospects, from the biggest storm ever gearing up to hit Florida to fears that North Korea may fire another intercontinental ballistic missile this weekend, to massive worries that the 10-year yield falling to a 10-month low.
Now, Irma could impact, we're already told, every major city in the state of Florida.
Also want to point out, guys, a lot of this has to do with possible demand destruction concerns as refineries are trying to get online after Hurricane Harvey. Now you've got the Florida situation developing.
Yeah, well, we're worried about the fuel shortages. We're worried about whatever worries the governor at this point.
Are they leaving? Are they staying?
We are seeing a massive exodus.
Traffic is nightmarish.
Because once the storm hits, you are on your own.
There's a lot of crops between the Georgia line and St. Louis that are getting ready for harvest. And we really don't need a hurricane to go up that channel. We need it to go up North Carolina and hit Washington, D.C.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, lots to worry about this week. We had a heck of a storm hit Houston, and now it looks like a Category 4 storm could be hitting Florida by the time you're listening to this program. And, of course, there's worries in Washington, and not to mention what happened last week with the detonation of a hydrogen bomb. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava. Welcome to this week's Financial Sense News Hour. Coming up in Hour 1, John Kosar will be joining me, and we're going to be talking about what he thinks could be lining up to be a perfect storm. You're going to want to hear what he has to say about the market and why he's getting more selective and defensive. Ned Schmidt will also be joining me on the program later on in the program as we talk about the commodity markets. It's becoming bifurcated. Well, if you have animal protein, well, beef prices, pork prices, chicken prices are going up. But other commodities like corn and grains and other things are falling. And of course, there's the precious metals, which are breaking out as we've now broken through the 1300 level. Is 1400 next for gold? All of that's coming up in Hour 1. And of course, we've got a little bit of a illness going on at the office, so I'll be doing the market wrap with John here in the first hour.
And I'm John Loeffler. Everyone's concerned about a storm right now. Of course, we're looking at Hurricane Irma heading towards Florida as we do the program. This is something we've discussed quite frequently here on the program before, the necessity for emergency preparedness. But what about autumn storms? I'm not just talking about the physical ones. We have geopolitical storms, weather storms, and financial storms, all seeming to cause jitters in the market. So we'll talk about that today on The Big Picture. And then an interview with Kevin Matsukata, who is an expert in prepping for governments, as a matter of fact. Prepping is an important thing because when storms come, well, basically, for the most part, you're on your own. And as always, we usually go to Ryan Poplava, but Ryan is out this week, as Jim just said. So Jim Poplava is sitting in Ryan's chair, keeping it warm. You're going to do something else other than keep it warm? I assume you're going to tell us about all of the things dumping on the market this week. So let's start with that.
Well, I tell you, John, there was no list of things to worry about this week. And that's why, you know, John Kosar and I will be talking about that coming up in the next segment of the show. But let's start out where we ended the week. The Dow was down almost 9/10 of a point. The S&P down about 6/10. The NASDAQ down a little over 1%. And the Russell down 1% as well. And one of the things that is really starting to concern even some of the technicians we have on the program, John, is you're starting to see a breakdown in the small cap indexes, whether you're looking at the S&P 500 or the Russell. You know, the large cap stocks are doing fairly well. They're still holding up. But the question is, what is happening with all of these events that are going on? Last weekend, over the holiday weekend, we had North Korea detonate a hydrogen bomb. And then after watching for a full week the devastation that was taking place in Houston, and why that that's important is a lot of our refineries are located in that area. And now you're talking about another hurricane hitting Florida. Gasoline is running out. A lot of the people that are trying to flee are having trouble filling their tanks. And then on top of that, all the mismatch and all the things going on in Washington, although we did dodge a bullet this week, this month there's only 12 days that Congress will be in session, and they had to get a debt ceiling. They had to get disaster relief to Houston, and then also they had to put together a government budget because the government's fiscal year ends at the end of September. Well, Trump couldn't get anything done with the Republicans, so he cut a deal with the Democrats. And of course, that's ticking off a lot of the Republicans, but they dodged a bullet. And that particular issue has been postponed for 3 months to the month of December. So, John, it's a confluence of events. If we were to describe this shortened week of trading, because the markets were closed in observance of Labor Day on Monday, but a confluence of events all ganging up at the same time. And on top of the hurricane that is due to hit landfall Friday night in Florida at a Category 4, there's two other hurricanes that are forming out in the Atlantic. And then not to mention the fact that we had an 8.0 earthquake off the shores of Mexico, and they're worried about tsunamis there. So all kinds of weather-related events all seem to be converging at the same time, and you're hearing all kinds of apocalyptic predictions. And so if you wanted to worry, quite honestly, the markets have held up much better given the fact that all of these things are occurring at the same time.
I guess the question we've got to ask at this stage of the game, looking at the deal that the president cut with the Democratic side of the slate, and let's face it, he's touted as somebody who gets the job done. And if the Republicans couldn't do it, then he's going to turn to the Democrats. But the market's been in this euphoria, we know, since the election about tax reform, the repeal of Obamacare. Is the market ever going to wake up to the idea that maybe these things aren't going to get done?
You know, that's a good possibility, but don't put it aside that the fact that maybe the president goes to the opposite party and cuts a deal. Now, if that happens, tax reform will not happen. You might get some tax cuts. There's going to be nothing anywhere near. There's no way that Democrats are going to vote for tax cuts for upper income individuals. Now, whether they can agree on a corporate tax cut, there seems to be some at least agreement between both parties. I mean, if you can lower corporate tax rates, we have the highest tax rates in the world. Of course, that would be a boon for corporate profits. So that would be a positive. I don't want to sound too apocalyptic because there are a lot of good things that can happen. We'll talk about this in the big picture. But right now, there's growing disenchantment with the current state of affairs and confidence in tax reform by year end. And if there is any tax cuts, it is going to be so dialed back, it could be much to do about nothing.
Anything else that you think is really causing impacts on the market? When I guess we'd have to look at it and say overall, it's pretty much of a negative week for the market.
Well, right now we have a dollar that's falling. And the reason we'll get into this as we get into the big picture, you have a dollar that is falling. The reason is there's less confidence that the Fed will be raising interest rates when it comes to December. And also we have falling inflation rates. Now, just give you a heads up, a lot of the economic data is going to be distorted over the next 3 months. So I just want to give you a heads up, and we'll cover this in the big picture. You don't want to make too much or too big of a deal out of any of the economic numbers, whether it's unemployment claims or economic growth in any way. It's going to be distorted by these hurricanes and weather-related events. But basically, what we're seeing is interest rates are falling. We've got the 10-year note that is approaching close to 2%, and if it drops below 2% or below 1.95, it could be the signal that there's something more ominous ahead of our future. We don't know that yet, and we'll talk about various reasons why we're seeing this drop in interest rates. But right now, John, there just isn't a lot of confidence. The Republican Party is too fractured, and it appears like Keystone Cops and incapable of governing, which is one reason you're seeing the president move more towards the Democratic Party to get something done. Because I think the last thing they wanted to do, especially with the way Texas has been hit, is attach, for example, a hurricane relief to a debt ceiling debate. And then it just makes it more complicated. It holds up things and you got political wrangling that's going on. So all this is reflected in the market this week. There were only four sectors that were up in the market on Friday: financials, industrials, and then healthcare and utilities. And watch the healthcare and utilities sector. They reflect more of what I call the safety trade. Now, the only thing missing there is consumer staples. They've been negative. If consumer staples were positive, then you're seeing a reflection more towards that safety trade. But we had some bad news. Qualcomm lost ground. A judge dismissed the company's ability to dismiss patent royalty lawsuit, which is allowing Apple and several manufacturers to withhold royalty payments. You also had some bad news. Target is announcing it's cutting prices on thousands of items, more deflationary events. And then Kroger, the large grocery store chain, said, you know what, we're going to stop giving forward guidance on our earnings. The company's earnings, or the stock price, is down 34% for the year. And then also there was the news Equifax plunged after it announced the company's website with access to 143 million customers' financial information was hacked and stolen. So Equifax stock down about 13-14%. So if you take a look at where we began the week on a big sell-off Tuesday, and this is very typical of what you see coming back after Labor Day as the big boys come back. But we began Tuesday digesting the news that North Korea had detonated a hydrogen bomb. And then also you turned on the television, you know, the things that you were seeing was not only the floods in Houston, but then the weather channels were saying, hey, we got a category 5 storm building out there that's going to hit landfall beginning in Florida. When it hits landfall, it could be a cat 4. We haven't seen anything like that. So if you're listening to this, you'll find out more of how bad that storm was. And the sort of downturn modified a little bit with the budget deal that the president cut with the Democrats, because everybody was expecting, oh my goodness, they're only in session 12 days. There's going to be a big budget battle here. And they have to come up with a new budget for the fiscal year 2018, which begins October 1st. On top of that, they have to get aid to flood victims in Texas, and these guys can't get along. And what happens? And so at least the budget battle was postponed for now. So anyway, tax reform is out there. But right now, the real question remains, and we'll know here in the next 2 months, it doesn't look like they're going to get anything done on Obamacare. That is out. So whether the president can bring both parties together and they end up doing a patchwork or quilt work of trying to fix the areas, because premiums are set to go up another double digit. They could be going up 25-30%. In 2018. That's after going up 25% this year. And then, of course, infrastructure. So, John, a lot of big ifs as we head into the fall, which is typically why this is storm season.
Well, Jim, thank you for sitting in for Ryan Poplava this week. And we're going to go into a lot of this in more detail when we get to the big picture in the second hour of the Financial Sense News Hour, as Financial Sense continues at financialsense.com.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com. To speak to Jim Poplava or his financial planning team, call us toll-free at 888-486-3939. That's 888-486-3939. We'd be glad to help you plan your customized investment portfolio.
In case you didn't know it, the Financial Sense News Hour is more than just our weekend show. We also have a weekday program featuring key economic experts, which is only available to our premium members. Here's part of one of the interviews from this last week.
If we were to move forward towards a war, do you have any ideas or projections on what kind of time frame? Is this something that would be imminent, or are you expecting something that's a little bit further out?
I think if this is going to happen, it's going to happen fairly soon. I don't want to say the word imminent, because that word gets hyped up as, you know, oh, next week there's going to be an attack. But the move by the United States to try to block oil into North Korea, in many ways, to me, that seems like the last possible non-military thing you can do to try and bring North Korea to heel. And if that doesn't work, and I don't expect it to work, then the United States faces a decision. Does it want to accept a nuclear North Korea and not bother with it? Or does it want to attack? The United States has maintained a pretty aggressive and intense force posture since March. There was one point there where we had three aircraft carriers off the coast of the Korean Peninsula. That's not normal. And the United States Army cannot maintain itself in a constant state of military readiness for that amount of time. And it has already been there because it's been trying to show teeth to the North Koreans that the United States is not bluffing. So I don't think imminent, I don't think it would happen next week. But if the United States is going to do this, yes, I think it probably is going to happen before the end of the year.
Well, it's been a negative week for the stock market this week. With all the events, seems like nature is wreaking havoc with the markets. Joining us from Asbury Research is John Kosar. John, let's begin with the stock market. Most of the indexes were negative this week, few exceptions like the utility index. But it's almost like autumn apocalypse, given everything that's happening geologically from earthquakes to hurricanes. So is some of this impacting the stock market?
I think it is. I mean, if you really take a look, we haven't gone anywhere. I'm just looking at a chart of the S&P as we speak. Since mid-June, we're kind of stuck in neutral. And you know, the interesting part of this is what I was looking at this morning, as we've been kind of stuck in neutral, the rest of the world is starting to outperform us. In particular, Europe, parts of Asia have been outperforming the S&P 500 since July. So, you know, that's kind of an interesting byproduct of this stall that we've had. And what's the scary part is we have a new earthquake in Mexico, two hurricanes, North Korea, the Russia investigation from Robert Mueller, and then to put the little icing on that cake, we've got seasonality that, you know, this is the worst time of the year. September is the weakest month of the year, and the last week of September is the weakest week of the third quarter. So you've kind of got a perfect storm kind of thing brewing here. So I think you really need to be careful, understand where your levels are, understand where your risk is, and you know, you're going to have to spend a little bit more time navigating and paying attention, I think, between here and Thanksgiving.
One of the things that really strikes me is, you know, if you look at this market from a valuation point of view, it's very high valued, especially when you look at some of these FANG stocks that have been sort of the go-to stocks in this market run-up. Whenever you get things that are overstretched or extended, as you do now, that's when these kind of events, whether it's hurricanes, North Korea, earthquakes in Mexico with more hurricanes on the way, I guess if the market was looking for an excuse to sell off, well, nature's giving plenty of those, along with politics.
Yes, I had mentioned seasonality. I kind of look at seasonality as a tertiary kind of an indicator. I mean, I really don't pay much attention to it, except when the surrounding geopolitics, earnings, all of the stuff we look at every day, when those start to coincide with what you have seasonally, you know, that's when you have to be careful. So, yeah, I mean, I think this is a special time to be careful. Frankly, I see it in a lot of different places. Our work shows that if we can't begin a new leg up here to new highs, fresh highs in the S&P 500, is, you know, what I call the market, if we can't do that, chances are pretty good that we're going to see a pullback. I think what's rescued us from having a pullback sooner is this kind of buy the dip phenomenon that we've had since we had quantitative easing. It's funny how the market works. Quantitative easing, I think, ended in October of 2014, and yet the investment public, the investment world, has been acting like the Fed still has our back, and I guess to a degree they do. But, you know, we've had this buy the dip phenomenon, so every time the S&P 500 gets near the 50-day, or every time we pull back 5%, I think the fear still is, and it's crazy to me, it used to be the fear of loss, you know, the fear that you were going to get caught in a buzzsaw and, you know, you were going to lose your money. That seems to have been replaced by the fear that you're going to miss buying the dip, and then we're going to have a sharp rally, and you're going to be chasing your benchmark. So I just think everything is kind of backwards, and one day the music's going to stop. And I don't know if that's going to be, you know, now, next week, or next year, but certainly, you know, given the perfect storm scenario that I kind of laid out before, we're particularly vulnerable now, I think, from now till the middle to latter part of October.
You know, something else we've been talking about, not just nature, but geopolitics. We have North Korea. The president just made a deal where they basically pushed off the debt ceiling limit to December. But John, you know, the market has been going up this year based on the assumption that a number of things were going to get done, from Obamacare to tax cuts to infrastructure spending. Now, Congress only has 12 days of in the legislature in September, then they go home, and the government's fiscal year ends in September. So that gives them October, November, and then we get into the holidays to get tax reform, to get a debt ceiling debate, to get a new budget for next year. I mean, that is a heavy legislative load. And these guys have had, what, almost 9 months now to get something done, and they've been unable to do anything. So is that a political risk as we head in towards the end of the year if nothing's done?
No, absolutely it is, especially with a Congress that's had a hard time agreeing if the sky is blue or if it's in day or night. You know, that's the kicker there, is you've had such polarization in Washington that deals that could be done are not being done because you can't agree with the Democrat or you can't agree with the Republican, and it's just so polarized. So, yes, I think, you know, this deal they just did on the debt ceiling, you know, obviously it was pleasing to the Democrats, you know, not so much for, you know, the Republicans. And again, I mean, I'm trying to find a ray of sunshine in a dark cloud, but I mean, if there could be a period where you get both sides of the aisle making compromises on getting infrastructure done, you know, or getting some kind of a tax deal done, and this could be a sign of maybe breaking that impasse where nobody wants to cross over that center line, you know, there's always hope. But based on past performance, I mean, I wouldn't bet on it.
Yeah, because, you know, we've had a very, very strong rally since November 8th of last year. And the market, you know, naturally is responding. The economy has picked up. You know, there were going to be corporate tax cuts. There were going to be individual tax cuts. There was going to be infrastructure spending. We were going to repeal Obamacare. We have had some movement on the regulation front. But the market's moving on assumptions that haven't taken place. And it's not just that the two parties are at loggerheads with each other. The Republicans can't even agree among themselves. So that's when I wonder if the market finally says, look, if they can't get it done this year, what are the chances they're going to get it done next year when we have an election year?
Well, you know, the one thing that I learned not to do is not to get too far over my skis and underestimating the resiliency of the American stock market, you know, global stock markets for that matter. People have been talking about, you know, there's been a cottage industry, as long as I've been in the business, of the next upcoming end of Western civilization. You know, we've had a couple of scares. I mean, you know, obviously the financial crisis in 08 was one, but I mean, generally speaking, historically, stocks go up. So what I try to do for our clients here at Asbury is to position ourselves in a lot of individual stocks. I'm doing a lot more individual stocks now than I ever have before. And what that allows me to do is...
You can cherry pick.
Yes. You know, the S&P, it's very hard to buy the S&P 500 and put a 5% stop underneath it and let it go. You're going to get bumped out a lot. But on a select group of 10 stocks, which is what we have in our individual portfolio that's part of our research package, I mean, I could get a stock or two that represent a foreign country. I can get a gold. I can get three or four individual stocks, you know, where the risk reward is 3-1, and a couple of short ideas, and be able to navigate it that way to try to circumvent any bad things that might be happening and still not hide under my bed. I think the worst thing to do is if people say, man, this isn't going to last forever. I got to get out of the market. So they pull everything out of the market, and now they're chasing 6% in their portfolios. That's when they make mistakes, by trying to catch up because they sat out. I think you participate, but to be use a rifle instead of a shotgun, if that makes sense.
I think this is a point where you have to cherry pick, because one of the things that has been very popular is this passive investing, where you just go into an S&P fund or a passive index fund. But once again, when you see these broad-based movements, they tend to occur in the index, where if you cherry pick your stocks, like you just mentioned, gold is doing well now. And so maybe owning some gold is a contrary indicator. I want to talk about two other things that we're seeing happening. And that is the breakdown, or we've seen a downturn in the Russell 2000, the S&P 600 small cap stocks, but also bond yields. You have the 10-year bond yield heading towards 2%. Is that more of a rotation in safety, or is it indications of the economy? Because the economic numbers have been looking pretty good.
I think in times of strife, in times of uncertainty, this is certainly one right now, I tend to look to the bond market for a more lucid and kind of a more sober indication of what investors in general are thinking globally. And I think the fact that you've had bond yields running towards 2% is an indication that, you know, despite the stock market's resiliency here this year, you know, and strength in the face of a lot of uncertainty, you know, the bond market is not quite so certain. You know, you've even seen that in corporate bond spreads, which are historically narrow, but they have started to widen. I watch them every day. Corporate bond spreads, you know, BAAs, high yield corporate bond spreads, they've started to quietly widen here over the past month. These are all kind of subtle indications that the bond market is looking out the horizon and saying, you know what, we want to handicap this a little bit in favor of what if something bad happens. I think that's what you're seeing in the bond market. I think that's what you're seeing in small cap. I mean, there's going to be a time here where small cap is going to outperform. I think after we get through whatever we're going to go through here between now and October and we get our normal kind of upsurge into the end of the year, in my world, that's when you want to look for opportunities in small and mid cap, because large cap looks like it's played out to me. But kind of kicking back to bonds for a minute, we also do a lot of work on interest rates. And like I said, if the stock market looks like it's uncertain, which it does now, I like to look to the bond market to get a little certainty. Our work shows, you know, we're around 2% right now. Around 195 is really kind of where the support is in the yield of the benchmark 10-year. I think if we hold in there, and I think we will, that's when we make that move back towards 3%. If we go through 195, to me, something geopolitically, something systemically has changed in the world. And then you have to be careful. But as long as bond yields hold in around 195, bigger picture, I think we're okay.
You know, something I'd like to get your take on it. You mentioned that we're in that period of time when you normally get, let's say, September, October, you call it seasonality. It's a weak time of the year for the stock market. Have you ever found a good explanation why that takes place? I mean, almost like clockwork. I mean, if you take a look at where we were in 2015, August and September were terrible months for the stock market. And, you know, here we are running into trouble. What is it about September and October that we get these autumn storms?
You know what? It's so hard to say. I just wrote a piece for Forbes yesterday, and it talks about that. And here's how I look at it. Even if you can't explain it, it happens. And there's only certain assets that show this, you know, reliable seasonality. In the S&P 500, we bottom in September, we peak in December, we have a little dip into February the next year, and then April is your second strongest month of the year, and then you have your sell in May and go away and start the whole thing all over again. Crude oil prices, the three weakest months of the year are the 3 months of the fourth quarter. Gold prices, August and September are the two strongest months of the year. You know, so you can speculate and try to say why, but I mean, I go back to 50 or 60 years of data and you see this. Nothing's all the time. I don't care what you do in this business. There is nothing that works all the time. So I don't know the answer to it, but I know it's a statistically reliable event that, especially when geopolitics or economics surrounding it would lend itself to that happening, you got to pay attention to it, because that's really when you see it track just as it tracks over a 50 or 60 year period, when you have the surrounding environment, so to speak, supporting a move down in the stock market, which we do now, that's when you have to pay particular attention. Doesn't mean to sell your stocks and you go hide under your bed until after Halloween, but it does mean that you might be a little bit more aggressive in protecting your holdings than you might in a different situation.
It seems to me you're making a case here for more active management, because a lot of this, and it's very easy when you look back in retrospect. I mean, if you were smart enough to get into the stock market in March of 2009 when the market bottomed, it's been one hell of a ride since that period of time, despite the numerous bumps along the way. But there are periods, whether you're talking about 2011, 2015, the beginning of 2016, or even the seasonality that we typically run into the fall, where a little bit of active management and more cherry picking is more appropriate.
I couldn't agree more about that for a number of reasons. You know, I had mentioned earlier, we've had this phenomenon for years where, with very few exceptions, the S&P 500 backs off to the 50-day moving average. It's 5 or 6%. You buy that, and then 3 or 4 days later, we're challenging the old highs, and those that didn't buy it are explaining to their clients why they didn't buy the dip, because that's all you have to do now is buy the dip. Any idiot can buy the dip. That's the kind of complacency that I'm seeing out there that I saw before the peak in 07, you know, where everybody was kind of leaning on the fireplace mantle during the New Year's Eve party, you know, and regaling their friends with what a stock market tycoon they were because they bought and held, you know, and why pay those guys anything? I mean, all you need to do is buy the market and go golfing. You know, that's going to end, and it's going to end badly, and it's going to end even more badly because of all the indexing that's been going on with the ETFs and all. There's a lot of buy and hold money, I think, in there now. And when the music stops, and one day we're going to get down to that 50-day and it's not going to hold and we're going to roll over. I mean, I know people from 08 who lost everything, everything. The past few years, I've been working with a lot more retail clients. Fidelity Investments has been asking me to do educational webinars for them. So I've been doing them for 3.5 years. I've gotten to know a lot of these guys. You know, they're 65, 70 years old. I mean, I know people who lost everything. So you know what? You don't need these guys. You know, it's like, you know, the gold rush. You buy a shovel, you dig into the earth, and you go to the bank. That's going to end really badly one day. So I couldn't agree with you more that just because we've had a few years that we haven't really had a correction to protect against, it doesn't mean that you don't put life insurance or fire insurance on your house and then go out and barbecue, because one day that's going to bite you real hard.
Yeah, a good example of that is the number of people that did not get flood insurance in places like Texas or Florida, because one of the things that really struck me, John, I was looking at some of these FANG stocks, whether you're looking at Amazon, whether you're looking at Facebook, and I looked at Amazon and I thought, who in their right mind would be buying this stock at 204 times earnings? And then I did a little further research, and as I start looking at the FANG stocks, the largest owners were all index funds. So an index fund, there is no thought given to what you're buying. If Amazon is 11% of the Qs or whatever major index, the money comes into the index, you buy Amazon. You don't ask questions about the price. You just buy. And this goes back to your point about all these people that are saying, well, I'll just put it in an index fund, go out and play golf, and I'm going to make a lot of money. Someday that's coming to an end. And as you mentioned, in 2008, there were a lot of people. I mean, from the peak of the market in September of 2007 to March of 2009, on price points alone, the S&P was down 58%. That's a big drop.
Yes. That is such an important point, too, because I think a lot of the folks that are saying, hey, listen, I don't need to buy any fire insurance, you know, or flood insurance for my house. I don't need to get somebody who knows what they're doing. It's easy to make money in the stock market. Well, easy is a lousy word to use, but I'm saying if you're investing in bonds, investing in a foreign exchange, you know, some of the commodity markets, whatever you might be doing, those markets go up and down with really little discretion. The stock market is the only one that has a historic upward bias that I know of. So a lot of people think, hey, listen, it goes up anyway. So, you know, who needs any kind of expert advice? When this really gets dangerous is 2008. It didn't happen in 2 months. It was a long, nasty spiral down. And what happens is people that don't do this for a living like you and I do, it sounds like we're making a commercial, but I mean, I really believe in this. People that don't do this for a living, first it's going to come back. You know, it always does. And now it's 10 or 12% down. And now it's, you know what, this is where I should be buying. I saw somebody on CNBC that said that we just are at the 200-day moving average, whatever it might be. So they're making excuses. And now it's down 15 or 16%. Now it's, God, I can't get out now because I'm down 15 or 16%. And I've heard that so much, I can't get out now because I've, you know, lost too much. So now I'm stuck. Then it's down 20, and then it's down 25, and then it's down 30. And now you're paralyzed, and now you're sweating bullets, and then you call somebody for help and it's too late. All the horses are out of the barn and it's on fire. So, you know, for getting somebody who knows what they're doing, you know, to protect what you've worked for your whole life, or to me, is like having a home and not having fire insurance, you know, homeowner's insurance on your home. I see it in this very, very same way.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at markets that are stretching. You look at where's the overvaluation or where's the bubble? And to me, the bubble is in passive investing because that's where the inflows are moving in, because it's like a no-brainer. The market has been going up each year, which it has for almost 8 or 9 years. So it's like, wow, if it goes up every year, I just stick it in an index fund and, like you said, go play golf. Well, John, listen, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow the work that you guys do at Asbury, tell them how they could do so.
The best way is to go to asburyresearch.com, and there's a contact tab there all the way at the end. Click the contact tab. All we ask for is your name, address, your email, and mention that you listen to me on Jim's show, and I will send you a package that includes a bunch of current research reports, information about us, a way to sign up if you like. And while you're on the website, I talked about using the rifle approach instead of the shotgun approach. If you look in the performance tab, you can see we've had 55 trading ideas that we put out there in ETFs and individual stocks over the past year. Performance is very good. And I think for right now, during these uncertain times, you know, rather than buying an index, it might be something to consider part of your portfolio, trading in specific stocks rather than an index, so you can get a little bit better diversification and kind of trim your losses in case we do roll over, so you're not sitting on an index that's a little bit unwieldy and a little harder to get out of. AsburyResearch.com, contact tab, and we will send you some free stuff.
You're listening to the Financial Sense News Hour at FinancialSense.com.
If you're approaching retirement age or concerned about making plans for those retired years and having adequate income, you're going to want to hear our Lifetime Income series every Monday and Tuesday here at FinancialSense.com. Right now, here's a preview of this week's Lifetime Income program.
Joining me on the program is Moshe Maleski. He's professor of finance at the Schulich School of Business at York University. He's also published a book called King William's Tontine. You know, professor, several weeks ago, I read the fourth edition of A History of Interest Rates by Sidney Homer and Professor Silla. And in the Middle Ages, they talked about the emergence of something called an annuity, which was used as a form of finance by governments. In other words, the annuity preceded the bond market, and it offered individuals in townships or in a country a lifetime of income. You've written a book called King William's Tontine. I wonder if you might talk about that and why that has a lot of relevance to today's annuities and insurance products.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to be on your show and to talk about this. As you correctly point out, annuities have preceded the bond market. In fact, I would say that annuities have preceded almost every other form of investment. They were available not hundreds of years ago, but thousands of years ago. Roman soldiers were granted annuities when they retired, so to speak, when they stopped fighting. In fact, there's even a reference in the Bible to annuities that were paid to individuals. So the annuity has a very, very long history, which sometimes means that you manage to accumulate quite a bit of controversy and scandal, as well as good stories. But you're absolutely right. They have been a very big part of the financial fabric for centuries.
Well, it's been a very tough year for commodities. You've had to be selective this year. There are certain things that are doing well, like precious metals and copper. But what about the rest of the commodity market? Joining us on the show is Ned Schmidt. Ned, let's talk about the ag sector first. If you take a look at the PowerShares AG, it's been going down since the beginning of the year. Give us a little insight. Is what's bringing commodities down? Is it oversupply?
Well, you've got to divide the commodity world up. In other words, most commodity indexes that you see popularly are useless. They don't measure commodity prices. I'll give you two examples. According to most commodity index, nobody eats chicken or rice. Let me assure you that the world eats a lot of rice, a lot of chicken. Nobody eats palm oil, which is the largest vegetable oil in the world. I construct my own index that uses 18 commodities. And that price index hit an all-time high 6 weeks ago. And you got to divide the commodity sector up into two broad sectors. One is animal proteins, or meat. Those prices this year have been screaming. Hog prices doubled from their low in October last year. Egg prices are up 300%. So most of the rally in the ag sector has been in meats, which are underreported in the commodity indices. The other sector is grains, which have been weak. They have been the epicenter of traders. And finally, seem to be misrunning, leaving that sector. But in any event, meat prices have screamed till about 6 weeks ago. And meat prices go into a seasonal decline about 4th of July. And they decline till about October when they bottom.
What accounts for that? Because normally during the summer, you know, people are outside, the weather's good, you're barbecuing, you've got the 4th of July holiday, you got Labor Day holiday, and, you know, the barbecues are being lit. So what accounts for that weakness?
Well, the meat is bought in advance. In other words, summer starts with Memorial Day, the end of May. So they start buying meats. You have to start buying in the meat chain to have meat on Memorial Day. You got to buy it in February. So if the buying cycle is 2 months or so in advance of whatever the calendar is. In other words, the summer barbecue cycle ends on Labor Day. So they quit buying 6 to 8 weeks before that. So they run down their inventories. Plus, hogs come to market in the fall. And so prices drop. Now, they'll drop till about October, and then they'll turn back up again. Like beef prices look like they're going to be up this week, which would be the first one in time in about 8 weeks that beef prices have been up. But it's a pure seasonality. The other thing that went on with meats is our exports of meat have exploded. The global demand for meat just appears insatiable. In the first 6 months of this year, our beef exports were up 15%, lamb was up 18%, and eggs were up 17%. The global demand for animal proteins is just massive. Now, the grains are probably ending their down cycle. You watch this market as much as anybody, Jim. These markets for years push everything to an extreme. They push apple to the moon and corn prices toward $3. And those things have probably reached an extreme. And one confirmation of that is that the commercial accounts, Jim, at the beginning of the summer, they were short 800 million bushels of corn. And there's a reason for that. 4th of July is about when the corn crop's in, and farmers have an idea how much they're going to produce. And they start selling that grain forward to the Cargills of the world. So those companies like Cargill were long a massive amount of corn in the field. So they were short 800 million bushels in the futures market. Now, with prices coming down, they have covered 750 million bushels. The commercials have bought 750 million bushels of grain in the futures market. We have soybeans back to a long position on the commercials. We got wheat back on the long side by the commercials. The commercials now believe that you need to be buying grains now. And so the grain cycle looks like it has turned, and all that is going to push grain prices up next year. So you have to look at the sector you're looking at before you can jump to a conclusion about commodity prices. from the commodity price indices because they just exclude so much of the market.
So what about in addition to, let's say, some of these grains have not done well, the meats are doing very well. That seems like eventually that should bring down some of the price because a lot of these grains are the feed that goes to feed a lot of the animal protein, whether it's chickens or beef. So would that indicate that maybe down the road we're going to be paying less for steak?
Yeah, what will happen is as the world expands its flocks and herds, they're going to have to feed them more grain. And what we're seeing is places like Africa, Southeast Asia, are incredible markets for both meats and grains because those economies are growing so fast and so well that their demand for food, in particular meats, is growing. And so we've got to be careful when we talk about what's going on. You know, the U.S. is important. But what's more important is what's going on in sub-Saharan Africa and what's going on in Vietnam, because those markets are extremely strong. And the other thing we're seeing is in Brazil. Now, Brazil has been important because it's been the source of a grain surplus for years. They're starting to use their grains locally. We have sugar plants that are converting from cane to corn sugar. Last month, we had the first corn-only ethanol plant start up in Brazil because they have so much local corn. That plant is going to use 44 million bushels a year. Brazil is now consuming 63% of their corn and 43% of their soybeans domestically. And as that grows, they're going to have less and less available to export. So this bulge of supply we've had is an abnormality that's getting ready to disappear as we go into next year.
All right. Well, let's switch from the ag sector and let's go over to another side of the commodities, which is the gold sector, which has been doing rather well recently. Gold breaking out over $1,300 an ounce, $1,351.60 on this Friday. Silver's over $18 an ounce. And copper has been doing well this year. So let's talk about gold and some of the drivers. And is this basically a safety trade? Because as gold is doing well, Ned, we're also seeing the yield on the 10-year treasury drop down to close to 2%. So is this a rotation?
Well, first of all, we need to change our thinking. One, gold's not going to $900. We can throw away those old forecasts. The question to be asked is what can stop gold from going up? Again, that's the question. What can stop gold from going up? We have the marriage of Harvey and Irma. Houston is the fourth largest city in this country. It is the heart of the energy sector in this country. If San Francisco fell in the ocean, we'd lose Facebook and Instagram. Meaningless. Right now, we've got 40% of our ethylene production offline in Houston. And what do we use that for? Jim, that's the water bottles in California. I don't know what California would do if we didn't produce any water bottles. This is such a big hit to the economy. Then you combine Irma, which we don't know what's going to do, and there is no chance of the Federal Reserve raising interest rates anytime in the next 6 months. There's no chance. And you'll see a little line go in the minutes. Economic uncertainty brought on by Harvey, okay? There is no chance, and the markets have finally understood that. The dollar has been collapsing. You got the pound over $1.30. You got the euro over $1.20. The Chinese yuan is up 7% since December. And for that reason, gold is going up because there is no support for the dollar. There's no interest rate support for the dollar. And this week, gold reaffirmed the bull market. In other words, the bear market low was in December of 2015 at 1,047. Yep, this morning, gold was up 30% from that low. The secondary low was in December of 2016 at 1123. This morning, gold was up 21% from that low, reaffirming the bull market. So the question on gold now is not what's going to make it go up. The question is what's going to stop it from going up. We hit $1,358 this morning. That's $18 away for an all-time high for this cycle. I don't think a lot of people realize just how strong gold has been. I mean, the S&P is up 10% this year. Gold GLD is up 17. I mean, you're in the wrong place if you've been in the S&P 500 and not in gold.
So, I mean, we've seen this happen in the past where we've had these nice spikes in gold, especially with a lot of political uncertainty as we have today. Now you add geological uncertainty. I almost want to call this week Apocalypse Now or the perfect storm, because not only have you had two hurricanes back to back, two more are coming and making their way across the Atlantic. You had an 8.0 earthquake in Mexico. And add to that the political storms coming in Washington, Ned, and it almost like you have the makings of a perfect storm.
It is. You know, and you and I haven't even talked about Korea. I don't know about you, Jim, but I don't see a possible positive outcome of that situation. Then you have oddball trading, though, like today. Gold hit 1358, and when the news came out that the House had passed the debt extension, they sold off gold. That good news to a trader. Listen, nitwits, raising the U.S. debt ceiling is not good news. That is bad economic news. And I don't know how much of it's Washington, D.C., Jim, but I think, I certainly wouldn't say it isn't, but I think that this lack of an interest rate increase is like the tide coming in, and all the other things like politics in Washington and Korea are just froth on top. And I think people need to go, you know, when the market for gold this year is up 16% and stocks are only up 10, you're seeing a massive shift in the trends in the market. And I think people need to own some gold and silver. Of course, now silver has been a laggard this year, but over the full cycle, if you go back to the December 2015 low, silver's actually up more than gold. Silver's up 35%. And gold's up 30. So my view on silver is that it'll catch up, but what's held silver back is all this nonsense with cryptocurrencies. I think money that would have normally flowed into silver is over speculating in a casino.
I see the same thing, because we had an individual who's been in cash for 4 years because he was expecting an apocalypse, and finally a call, he wanted to go into Bitcoin. And so, you know, when you start seeing people calling you up for Bitcoin because they want to get rich, it's almost like...
that's usually a sure sign, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. So what would you be doing here, Ned, given what you see in the commodities? As you mentioned, the meats are very strong with the demand for animal protein growing globally. Grains have been weak. We've got very strong bullish support for gold, by the way, and the futures market is now pricing a Fed increase in December. It's dropped down into the 30% where before the possibility of a December rate hike was in the 60 to 70%. So it's dropped in half just in the last month.
Yeah. Well, I think you need to look at special situations that are developing. In other words, there aren't a lot of cheap stocks out there anymore. In the grains, the one that looks cheap now is ADM, Archer Daniels Midland. It's one of the four major collectors. BG just can't seem to manage itself, and I keep hoping Glencore buys it, but that doesn't seem to be going anywhere. One of interest is Dow DuPont. Their merger was finalized on the 31st, and they are now cleverly named Dow DuPont. The new symbol is DWDP. When they get done with the merger, they will spin off their agricultural sector into a separate company. We lost Syngenta. We're going to lose Monsanto. So portfolio managers need another ag stock that would have seeds and crop protection. And so that Dow DuPont spinoff is going to be attractive, which makes the two dominant stocks that are left would be this Dow DuPont spinoff and FMC. But FMC has been run so hard, it's expensive. But if you look at FMC's run, that's probably what they're going to do to the Dow DuPont ag spinoff. Unfortunately, Jim, in the United States, we're being left behind in the world. This industry is shifting overseas. In other words, the largest beef company in the world is JBS out of Brazil. The largest chicken company is BFRS, or is it BRFS? Getting them twisted up here. But they're mired in the political problems. The largest pork company in the world, and this one might be interesting, is WH, which is the largest pork company in the world, the largest butcher in China. WH Group, that they have an ADR in the United States, WHGLY, and that may be one to look at. Then I think investors are forced to look at the ETFs, as much as I don't like them. It's Moo, M-O-O, RAG, and my view on metals is still old-fashioned. I think you should own physicals and then add to your position with the ETFs.
Well, listen, Ned, I know you are in northern Florida, in Jacksonville. I'm looking at a map on my television right now, Category 4 hitting Miami. It's supposed to be downgraded to a Category 1 by the time it hits Georgia and the northern part of Florida. So how are you? Because
I'm fine right now, Jim, because it's shifting to the west. But I do have a concern for this storm. The latest track, and they won't update the track until 5 o'clock, the latest track has it aimed for St. Louis. And a lot of people don't realize that these rainstorms from a hurricane, they can travel that far. There's a lot of crops between the Georgia line and St. Louis that are getting ready for harvest. And we really don't need a hurricane to go up that channel. We need it to go up North Carolina and hit Washington, D.C.
Maybe force them to actually do something.
Something good.
Yeah, something good. Well, listen, Ned, as we close, if our listeners would like to follow your work, you cover two markets. You cover the ag sector and the gold sector. Tell them how they could do so.
I have two websites. One is the agrifoodvalueview.com, and the other is the valueviewgoldreport.com. And it's always great to talk to you, Jim.
Likewise, Ned, you stay safe there and try to stay dry as much as you can as this thing works its way. Hopefully it'll avoid or at least be downgraded. At least right now, they're saying by the time it gets up to your neck of the woods, it's down to a Category 1, where it's a Category 4 in Miami. Stay safe, my friend.
Thank you, Jim. Take care.
Well, as Hurricane Irma heads toward the shores of the United States and a couple of more hurricanes seemingly to be stacked up, waiting to move in and do damage, unfortunately, there are storms headed toward the financial markets, not just physical storms, which do affect the market, but also we have geopolitical turbulence, and there is turbulence in the financial markets themselves. Are they going to form the perfect financial storm? Is that what we should be watching for? And if so, what do you do with your investments? That'll be part of the conversation on The Big Picture, along with a conversation with Kevin Matsukaru, who is a disaster preparedness consultant for governments and cities. And you can see right now, if you're looking at the news screen, that this is something cities need to be doing. All of that coming up next on the Financial Sense News Hour at financialsense.com.